Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back. Thanks for the update to Earl Forsey. We're Grant and Danny. We're sponsored today and each day by the law firm Kondorian Murad, estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration, and more. Their attorneys are there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today at kmlawyers.com. Mention us to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. Let's go to the Rood guest hotline. Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. That's where we find Richard Deitch, who's the outstanding media reporter for The Athletic. You can check out not only his work at The Athletic, but also his weekly sports media podcast. Richard, it's great to have you on the show. I was thinking about you last night as I was watching the finals, and I wanted to have you on because, you know, I've kind of thought throughout the finals that the halftime show, the pregame show, like, they're unwatchable, they're awful, I just don't enjoy them. It's becoming more shouty show, middle of the day, Stephen A. Smithy to me. And I thought I was kind of maybe in the minority, but I saw more and more of the complaining online. And I wanted to get your take of how we got here. Is this the idea from ESPN that they spend $20 million on Stephen A. Smith, so he's got to be on everything? And then if he's on the show, it just takes on that kind of, type of broadcast? Or is that what they prefer? Like, how did we get here, and what do you make of the blowback they got for their coverage of the finals?
Well, first of all, great to be on with you guys. First, I think the blowback and feedback is very fair and, quite frankly, accurate from those who are close watchers of the NBA. And the good news for NBA fans, you're going to get a lot of choices next year with NBC and Amazon coming to to regular season game broadcasts. So if ESPN executives are not familiar with how it might be done differently, they're going to get to see that firsthand. I would say, so it's a couple things, like very, very big picture, and this is no sort of genius synopsis from me. ESPN has made a decision over the last couple of years that they're going to invest in some very, very big names. They're going to pay those people an inordinate amount of money. They're going to give those people an inordinate amount of freedom. And they're going to sort of run their personality-driven shows around that. Stephen A. Smith is essentially at the top of the list. Pat McAfee is obviously there. Scott Van Pelt is there. Mike Greenberg's there. And then on the talent side, obviously, they pay Joe Buck and Troy Aikman a lot of money because they call their most important property. So, you know, their thesis is that they would like to get Stephen A. Smith in as many places as possible. Because one, certainly works hard and he's available. And two, they think what he has to say creates dialogue, creates virality. Business-wise, it's not necessarily the worst premise, but what I find, and I think is absolutely accurate from seeing the same response, you know, on social media, is that too often the broadcast becomes about Stephen A. Smith. The broadcast becomes too often about what an ESPN personality has to say, as opposed to the broadcast itself. And when you watch that halftime show in particular, because there's not a lot of time and they have a lot of commercial obligations, it really becomes pronounced. You know, it's like 30 to 40 seconds of Stephen A. Smith, and sometimes Bob Myers does this as well. Sort of, it's all about like what their opinion is. And that's sort of where the thesis of the show exists. And, you know, you can get away with that for a little bit, but at a certain point, it especially because a lot of the commentary becomes very negative. It's not like, oh man, look how awesome the Pacers are. It's man, the Thunder have absolutely not taken advantage of the fact that Tyrese Haliburton's gone. So sort of two ways to look at it, but you sort of have too much, but at a certain point, you just have too much negativity. It's not engaging for the audience. You don't bring the audience in. You know, ultimately sports is about camaraderie, community. You want to go for the ride. There are times certainly criticism is warranted and stuff, but that's my issue with ESPN is it's become too much about what the analysts say, at least during what I saw during the finals outside of the game, and not enough like bringing me in, like wanting me to hang out. And they've been criticized probably about as severely as I have seen them being criticized for a finals presentation as long as I have written about that network.
So, Richard, I was watching the game with my wife for a little bit last night. As I'm sitting there grumbling and grousing and, like, you know, doing that, like, that huffy thing that sports fans are probably doing at home, where I'm, like, pointing to it and shaking my head and, like, muttering stuff under my breath about the way it used to be with my 11-year-old son within earshot and everything. And she's going, what's your problem? Like, what's bothering you so much? And here's the example I used, and I actually saw you tweeted about this. Bob Myers, who is a welcome addition to any panel, I think, from his experiences, had a superstar try to play through a calf injury that led to a torn Achilles. What a unique resource to be able to throw to him and talk about what are the trainers, what are the conversations before the game? What does the star think? You know, what sort of precautions are taken? You know, what sort of things are we weighing? And it was never mentioned. And it was, you know, Stephen A. Smith calling out the manhood of Oklahoma City for something or other, you know, and I'm going, that to me is the microcosm of it. Just expound on that if you would.
Yeah, first of all, ESPN, I would have done this for free. They could have thrown it to me because I was at the Raptors-Warriors game when Kevin Durant went down. Mm-hmm. So I would have been happy to weigh in on that as well. Although my experience in running NBA teams, is about the same experience.
It's a slightly second behind Bob Myers, yeah.
Yeah, as in zero. But you're correct. Like, they literally had a guy who could speak. Like, the second most important person in that series went down. Right. And the most important player, the heart of basically the Indiana Pacers, went down. You have a guy on set who lived it. He lived Kevin Durant going down. That entire series ended when Durant went down. You know, Warriors continue to play out against the Raptors, but that was it. And I still believe, as again, someone who lives in Toronto, Kevin Durant doesn't get hurt. The Warriors are beating the Raptors. And as much as I love the Raptors and love the city of Toronto, I think that would have happened. And that would have been fascinating. That would have been like interesting. Like, what, you know, where were you when that happened? I assume in the arena. Like, what do you think about as a general manager or president of basketball operations, like when that goes down? Like, how does the team react to that? Like, that would have been interesting. So I'm with you. And that's frustrating because, again, I think too much of it is just it's a POV or a like an ethos. It's just the ethos is we're going to highlight what our personalities have to say. And that's going to be the driving force. I do want to sort of just make a point because it really is important, and it's important to distinguish this. That's not the game coverage. Like, that's not what Doris Burke, Mike Green, and Richard Jefferson do. Mm-hmm. Like, I really think whether you like them or not as a trio, they're focused on the game. Like, that's not about, like, you know, who could get who could say something that, you know, that gets them to Twitter. So it's very much with their NBA coverage, I feel like, a product of their pregame show and halftime. And then lastly, and they also made a larger decision on this, you know, they have gotten rid of some very, very heavy basketball people. You know, Zach Lowe would be probably the biggest example of that. And, you know, like, people aren't dumb. Viewers aren't dumb. Like, you make some of these decisions where, you know, you're trading like very hardcore X's and O's. Maybe someone who's not as, a television friendly, for the people who can give you takes. But that's the decision they made. It very well may be the smarter business decision, but this is just my belief. I just don't believe it serves fans at the end of the day, particularly in a final setting.
Richard Deitch of The Athletic with us on Grant and Danny. One more on this, and then I want to pivot to what's next for the Inside the NBA crew from Turner. But maybe the days that I long for are just dead and gone. But what I'm looking for in those shows is just so different than the rest of the day, right? Whether it's Stuart Scott or Maliko or whoever else, someone's sitting there teeing people up, and it's grown-ups having conversations where they're not talking over each other. Wilbon, like Bill Simmons, I know you have to be an athlete or a GM now to have an opinion on sports, but, you know, Bill Simmons sitting there is awesome when he was doing it, and it's just so gone that it feels to me like at some point there was a meeting at ESPN where they went. Like, I was half surprised Pat McAfee wasn't in Indiana for one of these games in a tank top sitting at the set with his face painted. It was like Stephen A. Smith's Knicks and Pat McAfee's Pacers. And there's a time and place for that in the middle of the day for the personality-driven stuff, but it just all bleeds together now. And, like, when I need my analysis, I can't get it.
You know, you should be writing columns for The Athletic, basically. I'm going to retire. There's nothing left for me to say. No, you nailed it. I mean, like, I agree with you. Like, I used to be much more hardcore when I was younger about, man, like, the takes industry is just, like, it's destroying everything, et cetera. I feel like, it is what it is. Like, you know, America in 2025, everybody's got an opinion. You hope people's opinion are intellectually sound and you're not, you know, garbage deliverers like Skip Bayless. But, like, opinion is opinion. It's going to exist. But I'm with you. Like, again, it's just, it is so hard to sometimes, or at least I found so hard during the pregame again of this series to find myself like learning stuff. In many ways, I really feel bad for Malika Andrews, who I think is very, very talented. Actually gave a very, very thoughtful game seven note. But like, what can you do? You can only do so much in the pilot seat, basically, because the entire infrastructure exists at this point at ESPN to highlight these very bold opinions by, again, the Smiths and McAfees and Greenbergs, et cetera. So I don't necessarily think it's going to change outside of sort of this one thing, and this is a big thing. For so many years, ESPN could not obviously touch inside the NBA. I know internally executives hated the fact that, you know, their coverage would be crushed where inside was always praised. And at a certain point, just given the economics of the world, Jimmy Pitaro, president of ESPN or chairman now of ESPN, made a great decision, traded some college football game inventory for the right to have that show on next year, particularly during the NBA finals and some high profile postseason games. So in some ways they've solved the problem. They haven't solved it for every regular season game, but for the games that matter most, and for the games that are going to draw the most audience, you're going to have Shaq Kenny and Charles Barkley next year. And if not, whether it lasts a year or three or four, during that run, you're going to see the criticism of ESPN's, you know, pregame and halftime and postgame during the NBA Finals essentially not exist because they have they couldn't beat their competition, so they bought it, and that turns out to be a pretty good move.
Richard, you tweeted about this also, I think it was yesterday, and I'm trying to find a way to quantify. You also mentioned this earlier in our conversation just now. I feel like there wasn't enough about the play. Like, everyone's going to complain these aren't two major market teams, so they'll sort of roll their eyes at the ratings, whatever they end up being, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. I don't care. I had a great time watching basketball. But I feel like there wasn't enough drawing in with the players and their stories. Like, it's impossible not to connect SGA's quote-unquote failure at the Olympics, where he was so pissed off and disappointed that Canada lost to France, not to bring up a sore subject, but that was sort of the driving force behind this world tour, this MVP campaign, where he was the best player wire to wire, did something that three other guys in history have done, and it's basically Michael Jordan a couple of times. MVP, lead the league in scoring, finals MVP. Like, his revenge tour coming from that, and I feel like I never heard about it for these finals, or any of the other remarkable stories about how the Pacers got here, et cetera. Just drawing people in to what could have been a kind of a renaissance sort of new frontier for the NBA with parity and a little bit less, you know, it's LeBron James versus somebody else. This could have been a golden start. It feels like it was squandered a bit.
One of the things that, by the way, it's an excellent point by you. One of the things, I think it might have been Brian Curtis of The Ringer, if it wasn't, whoever it was, and if I don't remember, my apologies. Although the likelihood of them, you know, unless they're from your area listening to this, I'll probably get away with it. But the point was that one of the things that you see on College Game Day and some very other famous signature shows are these like 6-7 minute long features, right? Where you really get to know the person. A lot of times when it comes to College Game Day, it's usually like somebody who suffered some tragedy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a college football player maybe whose parents passed away or maybe had to overcome illness or something like that. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would be the perfect example of, okay, let's do a 7-minute feature where we go to this guy's hometown, you know, which is Hamilton, Ontario in Canada, and like just figure out like how on earth could one of the best players in global basketball come from Canada and like come from this like, you know, sort of mid-city sized place. And how was the Olympic experience like part of the driving force? Because, you know, I can tell you obviously living here that it was a major disappointment. Canadians thought they were going to medal and, you know, they ended up losing to France before the medal round. So I'm with you on that. And again, that's the kind of stuff that like, I think people would appreciate And remember, again, no one is saying it's got to be, you know, no one's saying it's got to be the PBS NewsHour or Frontline. Mm-hmm. But it also can't be like, you know, who can I blast and rip for sucking like all the time? You know, like there has to be, at least in my opinion, a little bit better media. And then here's the other thing, too. Like, you guys know this. NBA fans, especially the diehard ones, they are very, very into, like, X's and O's and analytics and the draft. Like, they happen to be, like, very smart, educated about their sport. So if you just give them, like, BS hot takes, they're going to think you're a clown show. Because, like, they're the type of people who are, like, going really, really deep on, like, okay, like, what's the expected points of this team? You know? Or, like, how is this player, like, you know, like, what kind of player, how is this player, like, within 15 feet versus outside of 15 feet? Like, I'm not saying everybody's a nerd on that, but there's a lot of, like, nerd out kind of NBA fans. And I would say there's a very high percentage of, in many ways, compared to some other sports. And ESPN just doesn't cater to that. But, you know, at least during the finals, at least from my perspective, it was just like catering to like the lowest common denominator kind of quick take, like who sucks at the moment? Why do they suck? Or it's like, hey, I think this and let's put this up on ESPN.com and blast it out there because this is what I think. I do. If your listeners want one piece of news, and I think this is, competition usually makes you raise your game. And I think ESPN's going to watch Amazon and NBC next year, and they're going to be like, I'm not going to curse on your network, but they're going to be like, holy bleep.
Yeah.
Like, we got to get our act together. It's like these guys are putting together some really good productions. And so I do think it's going to help raise ESPN's level.
Richard Deitch of The Athletic. I'll squeeze one more in here in our final minute off the beaten path, but I'm a big hockey fan. I watched the Stanley Cup. It was incredible. We had a Hall of Famer in our midst, one of the greats ever, and Connor McDavid, and a back-to-back championship-winning team that might be the most dominant team going into next year in all of the professional sports in Florida. And I premise this to say, nobody watched the Stanley Cup. Like, more people watched what was really fun and entertaining, but when internationally we got all the countries together for the Four Nations during the All-Star festivities, why can't the NHL get people to watch their championship series?
Well, I mean, listen, I love hockey, and especially, you know, having moved to Toronto a couple of years ago, you can't basically escape it here. You know, it's like, as an American, I'm like in the wilderness trying to look for college football on a Saturday, but trust me. Like,
you can't turn on a TV without bumping into hockey.
Yeah, right. Canucks Hurricanes. It might as well be like a Taylor Swift concert. So you're like inundated basically with hockey everywhere. And so in this country, it was no issue. Like both series between the Panthers and Oilers did really, really well. My sense on hockey is that I think at the end of the day, it's a great regional sport. Like, it's not a national sport. And outside of a star playing in one of the traditional big U.S. markets that draws television numbers, Chicago, Philly, New York, Boston, I don't know if there's an answer. Like, I think it's a great product. They've really improved in terms of the television part of it too. But I don't know if there's a fix on this, because the play is great. Like, if you watch the NHL postseason, I think it was far and away the best postseason of any of the postseasons.
So good.
For the major sport. So it wasn't about the play on the particular field or arena. I just think it's ultimately a regional play. And if I had to guess, this is just like sort of being a little bit of a sociologist, I think there's just too many people in the United States who just don't grow up skating, or just don't grow up in an environment where hockey is like a big part of their lives. Like, if you grow up in, you know, Houston, Texas, right, or Jackson, Mississippi, or something like that, I'm not saying like you've never ice skated or you don't know what it is, but you know what I'm saying? It's not like you walk down the street and you see pickup basketball or you see kids playing football. And I don't know what the solution is on that. Where the other major sports, you know, particularly in this case, baseball and football and basketball, they kind of have that. Like, most kids do grow up sort of seeing it around them. So I don't know what the NHL fixes. I will say that this one in particular, a lot of things were conspired against the NHL. One, it has a Canadian market, so you get no viewership in the United States for that. Two, Florida's not the biggest media market, so you're going to be hurt by that. And three, and this was a big one, games were on cable, keep in mind, right? They were on TNT and not ABC. So that alone is, you're losing about 1 million viewers on that, just that little fact alone. It still makes a difference in 2025. So there were things sort of running against this one that were going to hurt the NHL no matter what. But if you're the NHL, I mean, honestly, you know, if you get, let's say, like Rangers, I'll just make this up, Rangers Avalanche next year, it goes back to ABC, you know, you'll see 30% increase for the Stanley Cup final. So their story, the one thing I can tell you, having written about this all the time, they'll have a much, much better viewership story next year no matter what. You know, unless, you know, knock on wood, unless it's Edmonton, Toronto, and then we sort of have some of the same issues.
Richard, great with us as always, man. Really appreciate the time.
Great. Thanks, guys. Be well.
Thank you. There's Richard Deitch. Outstanding. Check him out in The Athletic. Good insight on sports media coverage and the landscape right now. A massive movie theater release anniversary just came and went, and it's got us thinking about all-time fun theater experiences next on Grant and Danny.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Grant and Danny, welcoming you back on The Fan. Thank you for making the show part of your day. Our double play's coming up at 3:45, and we're going to stretch the double play a little bit today. Want to talk about movie theater experiences, because I saw, Danny, that the 50-year anniversary just came and went of Jaws in movie theaters. Now, your boy is in his mid-30s, okay? So I was not around in 1975 when Jaws dropped. But the way that it has been explained to me by people that were around and did go to the movies as teenagers or older at that time was that it completely changed the genre, so to speak.
Without a doubt.
It was the first summer smashola. It was the movie that everybody went to see and cared about and loved. And if you hadn't seen Jaws, you were just on the outside looking in. Like, for me as a kid, not a summer smash, but the Titanic was that way. When that movie came out, Titanic, and it ended up winning 14 Academy Awards. It was one of those things where at school or whatever, I was like in young elementary school, if you hadn't seen it, it's like, what's going on
with
your
family? What's wrong with you? Is something wrong?
You guys didn't go to Fredericksburg to the, you know, Regal Gallery Place in Central Park to see Titanic? What's going on with the Rouillets? But 1975, 50 years ago, Danny, which is wild to think about.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, we are basically the same distance away from when Jaws came out in 75 as we are from, like, the Roaring Twenties.
Right.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, like, it's same distance there as it is to 2075 in the other direction.
But
I'm sure everything's fine.
That movie supposedly had the biggest theater effect on people enjoying that experience as any film that's ever come out.
It's up there. I mean, there, you know, that one changed everything. I mean, before it was these filmmakers' films, you know, whether it was Streetcar Named Desire or Citizen Kane back in the day, and then you go into The Godfather, where it's, you know, master's courses in filmmaking, but not this big summer epic kind of thing. Star Wars, a couple of years later, of course, would kind of piggyback off this, and the blockbuster kind of became what we were used to, right? Like, every summer, it's like, you know, now that a movie released in January, nubs. It's, you know, a B-action star throat chopping in some impossible situation. You know, the big badass, right? Starts in May, comes out sometime in June, July, August, whatever. That's when you're going to go see that big epic thing. So I wasn't alive at that point, but my dad's talked about that one. And it's one of those that still holds up, talking about Jaws. But yeah, there have been a handful of those where you had to have seen it, right? Like, that's the way you'd phrase it, right? Kind of what you're talking about. What do you mean you didn't see it? Of course everybody saw it.
One I remember from my childhood that was iconic, and people talked about their experience because of the visuals and the sounds, was Jurassic Park in 1993. I was only five. I didn't go, but I still distinctly remember my dad talking to people about that movie. And remember when it came out at the time, dating myself a bit, on VHS and was on TV or whatever, and we got the movie. And I remember as a kid watching it and being scared, but like the scene where, you know, it's like, dum, dum, and the water's
moving.
In the theater, that was supposedly just like an all-time moment.
Because again, we had all these advancements in,
of course,
all the lights
like
and
now
the sound
we don't
and
even
stuff.
Think about yeah. it. But at that time, there were these huge technological breakthroughs where it was like, damn, that does sound like a dinosaur is coming toward
all the LucasArts stuff, the THX, the Industrial Light and Magic sound, adding all the different practical effects and the different surround sound deals.
I just took my kids, I told you this last week, to see How to Train Your Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it in 3D. I was told to see it in IMAX. We just couldn't make the times work. Apparently, it's silly in IMAX. And after seeing it, I actually, like, even without them, I would go back to see it in IMAX. I mean, it's visually a stunning film. And in 3D, it was breathtaking. I mean, it was, I'm not even a 3D guy. I don't really enjoy it. But I guess my point is, for my kids who are 4 and 6, they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
Like, they put on those glasses. They watched those dragons flying at them and the fire coming at them in the theater. And they just didn't get it. They've been to the Legoland over at the mall where it's like a 4D experience where they blow air and there's a little water that drips on you and all this stuff. What we have now compared to, like, if you were to go today, Danny Rie and me would go back in time and watch Jaws in theater, it would be nubs. You know, we'd be sitting there like, this, but it's just a matter of the times, right? And I don't want to take away from that. But this got me to thinking, 50-year anniversary, Jaws in the movie theater, people reminiscing at the time they kind of fell in love with going to the theater. And I was talking to my wife about this over the weekend, and I said to her, I said, and she's not a movie guy, okay? She doesn't like watching movies. She doesn't like going to the movie theater. I take my kids all the time. She normally stays home. Like, that's her time away from dealing with us. And so I said to her, I said, do you have a movie that you remember going to the theaters and having an amazing experience that you were excited about or that you still look back on? And even she had one, and that's how I knew this would be a fun conversation.
Uh-huh.
Hers was, I hope I'm not saying the wrong nerd movie, but I'm pretty sure she said last night, Lord of the Rings. Like the
really?
Yes. Like the first Lord of the Rings, because she read all the books
Fellowship
or whatever.
Of the Ring, yeah.
Like that was her answer. I knew you'd be psyched.
That's a great one. That's a great answer.
How old would we have been? She's about my age.
Yeah, so that's early 2000s. So I can't remember the exact year. It's like 03, 04, somewhere
school,
in there.
High school.
Yeah.
04, we would have been high school. So that I think that's a reasonable enough answer. Here's mine. I've got a few. Like recently.
Yeah, I've got several.
Recently, Top Gun Maverick. Darius, fire up the Top Gun theme for me when you can. But it was post-COVID. I was a Top Gun guy from the original, the OG, which is before my time.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's still
it was
awesome.
Cool because it was cool. Like, yeah. I remember people saying, you got to watch Top Gun when I was growing up. And I'm like, okay.
Sorry about the anthem. Sorry.
The anthem. When it hit in the theater, chills.
Every time, dude.
Why do I have a water system in my eyes? What's happening here? I love Top Gun Maverick. And Steven Spielberg has made the case that that movie and Tom Cruise saved the movie theater industry after COVID because no one was going and they brought him back. And by the way, it's one of the biggest, most successful North American releases as far as summer blockbusters in history, right? You start to dig into, well, how did he save the movie theater industry? Like, well, why would you say that? He literally was like calling different movie makers, different companies and going, hey, we're making this movie. Are you guys making your movies? And they're like, no, not right now. He's like, well, we're going forward, so you better go forward. And like, he got people to start making movies again by lying to different companies and stuff. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah, like a personal thank you to me for coming into the theater, you know,
exactly,
that he recorded before
yes.
the movie.
And, which is now becoming the norm, and he does that on Mission Impossible and whatever else. But, so that one's high up there. But my all-time number one seed, as far as exciting movie theater experience that I was giddy about and it thoroughly enjoyed, Dark Knight. The Dark Knight on opening night at the Udvar Hazy. Beat that. The hype about that movie, people sleep. They completely forget. I don't even know why the hype was so big. But Christopher Nolan was
taking
over.
Batman Begins was awesome. And this was going to be the opus. This was the you had the prequel, the prelude,
but it's
the
bigger
beginning.
Than that. So yeah. Batman Begins was sick. Christopher Nolan's the man. He's taken over this thing. He hit a home run with the first. This was the bigger, better story movie anyway. And then the Heath Ledger hype. Heath Ledger had already passed before that movie came out. I'm almost positive, right? Heath Ledger is the Joker, and because of what had happened, may want to double check me, but I'm pretty sure he was no longer with us when that movie came out. I think that the hype around that performance was like, this is one of the all-time villain performances ever in history. And so I wanted to go see it the best way I could possibly see it. And I think one of the reasons I had such a great experience is how do you see it, right? Udvar Hazy, biggest screen, best audio, best everything. That opening bank robbery scene.
The one note on the whatever, the string instrument.
Guy, I wanted to stand up in the theater and just start screaming, yes! Yeah, like 5 minutes into the movie. It was like you could have stopped the movie then and said, give us another $1,000 and walk out and don't say a word. And I would have been like, no problem. It was just, I don't know, something about that night, that movie, maybe it was where I was in my life as a young person who had money and no kids and could go do what he wanted to do.
Because within a matter of minutes, six different moments of misdirection, an homage to Heat, by the way, an all-time classic gangster bank heist movie with your boy, the guy that played Colonel Willie Sharp from That's Armageddon, right. as the bank manager with the shotgun, like chasing the guys down, like, where'd you learn to count? What doesn't kill you makes you stranger.
I mean, that bank robbery scene against any bank robbery scene in any movie ever.
I'll agree with that.
And I will stack it up and say beat it and you won't be able to do it.
Perfect.
But for me, it's Dark Knight. I want to get yours next and then let's hit the phones as our double play here. What's your number one theater experience movie when you look back at your time going to films? Based on Jaws, 50 years ago this week, hitting the theaters and changing the game. You're listening to Grant and Danny.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. It is time for our double play, driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealers today. What's going on in our lives? Nothing to do with sports. You already know, 50 years ago this week, an iconic movie theater film dropped. It was one of the first ever summer smashes.
Summer blockbuster, yeah.
Everybody's still chasing, right? And it was Jaws. And so it's got us thinking about our number one movie theater experience ever. Danny, I gave you mine, The Dark Knight at the Udvar Hazy. I think it's Udvar Hazy, but it's out in Chantilly. It's the gigantic IMAX. It's basically like the, you know, you go sit there and you can look at the stars above your head. Biggest screen ever. One of my favorite movies ever. I'll have that until the day I die. Yeah. It was perfect.
Similar, saw it with a couple comedy pals in Upper West Side. This IMAX theater in New York was amazing. A couple of are on the phone, so I won't take those away. I'll let Darius hit the soundtrack for mine. My first R movie, I got permission, say smash hit in the 80s. Years we waited for the sequel. Usually the sequel lets you down. Not this one. One of the great sequels in history. It's James Cameron. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's Linda Hamilton. And introducing the T-1000. That's Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Oh, yeah.
The no paperwork we make, and we learn about the final destiny. It's supposed to be, and then they made like seven more afterwards. And I'm not sure if it's
so
Genesis or Dark Fate or whatever.
In 91.
I was 12.
Okay, so this is I was three. This is a little before my time. I can only imagine.
We begged and pleaded. We had like an older kid. So my buddy's older brother, who I was friends with too, he was the guy that was going to take us. right? And he was the one in charge. Parents finally okayed it. No one knew like how.
Was there a no parents night?
Yeah, there wasn't much like R rate. You know, no one's sure about PG-13. What's R? I mean, there's no way we should have been seeing this movie, but we did, and it ruled. 12-year-old Fanny Mouye was a pig in mud.
I can imagine. All right, Darius, you could call us at 800-636-1067. Ryan, I want to get yours. I want to go to the producer room here. So maybe we'll start with you, Clary. Your all-time movie theater experience one seed.
It was the late 2000s, and at that point in time, I was just kind of getting into like the grown-up movies. Like I was big into Toy Story and all the other cartoons out there, and then one movie piqued my interest. Avatar. Avatar was awesome. It was the one movie in my life I went on the premiere night, AMC Tyson's Corner. We saw it in IMAX. We saw it in 3D. We watched all 3 hours of it, and it was an awesome film. I even have a story. This is pre, like, when you have reserved seats. So I had to sit actually in the aisle because there was no open seats next to my parents. It was an awesome, awesome movie. I still watch it today. I'll watch all 3 hours. It's a great movie.
So I would love the Joan, and I know if I let Danny, he will. So I'm going to just
cut you off at the pass. It's his theater experience.
It is his theater experience. Uh-huh. And also, number one, number two, number three, all time. Highest grossing films.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean they're good films.
I know.
But they are, to Ryan's point, Avatar, James Cameron, $2.9 billion.
It's so much. How much? It's astounding.
I guess it's just the first and the third, because Avengers Endgame actually became number two all-time with $2.8 billion. But Avatar is one in three on the all-time list in terms of highest-grossing films. I respect that, Clary. Look at you going to Avatar.
You would do a movie.
It was an awesome movie. IMAX experience, 3D, I loved it.
Looked weird to me, never saw it. All right, Darius, you're up.
So my actual one seed would be both the Avengers movies, both the last two Avengers movies, Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame.
Endgame, number two highest-grossing film ever.
Right. Infinity War, I say, just because the experience of leaving the theater with the way the movie ended and everybody just kind of like being like, wow,
what?
Really, like, we really lost. There's no way. How did
spoiler
we lose?
Alert.
That never happens.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, if you haven't seen the movie, that was 10 years ago. And then Endgame, it was the interaction, everybody coming together and cheering for, you know, that big finale of
the
that
moments.
Movie. Yeah, all the moments that brought everybody together. I just never experienced anything in a movie theater like that.
That's such a good point.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about, like, I remember
people
in the
going
movie,
crazy.
Wedding Crashers, when Will Ferrell comes on the screen for his cameo, where he's like, Mom, the meatloaf. He got a massive ovation in the theater. And it wasn't like annoying that everybody was clapping. It was like he was on the greatest heater of all time.
It was
like
Chaz Reinhold, man.
Old school and Anchorman and all that stuff. And people are like, yes, it's Will Ferrell. Yeah. Like, what a great moment. But to your point, that is one of the greatest theater experiences ever with like the reveals and the cheers. I remember.
Like, as soon as you know who says on your left. I mean, like, people are screaming.
Silly. What was the movie that Ryan ruined for Darius?
For me.
Oh, that was Deadpool.
Yeah. Deadpool and Wolverine. Deadpool.
Yeah. So, like, similarly, not on the same level, but when Deadpool Wolverine came out, and there's some huge reveals in that, in the theater, it's like, oh, my God. And then the next one's like, oh, no. It's just a fun thing to be at. You don't get that in your living room. All right, let's go rapid fire. We want to knock out as many of these as we can, so you got to be real quick. Let's go to Sean in Falls Church. Lightning round here. What do you got?
So, Grant, I was in the same theater and the same night and
let's
everything
go.
With you. I'm not even kidding. I was sitting in a section. Apparently, some guy wanted to ruin it for the rest of us because it was amazing. As soon as they open up to the Chicago skyline in Dark Knight, he goes, I can see my house from here. And I spoke up because I wanted to make sure we got what we wanted. I said, I can see your mom from here. Shut up. And
oh, man.
We all laughed for 3 seconds, and then we were silent for 3 hours. It was beautiful.
That night, I kind of remember there was a little bit of shtick happening.
There's some shtick,
at different points. But that night couldn't have been more perfect. Dark night, Udvar Hazy. I'd love to live it back. Run it back. Chris in Hyattsville, best movie theater experience you had.
All right, so Danny stole my number one seed, the Terminator 2. Which, by the way, Danny, I'll say you'll fall off the fence on dead. But one of the great things about going to the beach as a kid was I went to a place where there was a movie theater literally at the end of the block, and I got to go to movies unattended.
Oh, that's cool.
With a Sick. Note that said, please let my child watch R-rated films. That was the 80s for you, okay?
It's a different time,
1989,
man.
Michael Keaton, Kim Basinger, Jack Nicholson, and Prince. I'm talking about Batman.
The OG.
Yes, you are. The OG Batman's damn good. I get it. Especially if you're a young guy alone with a little freedom on vacation.
Because that was the comic booky style, right? That was the, like, the sort of the fun, campy take, and it was great.
John in Herndon, what's up? John, you there, buddy? Let's go to Derek in Manassas on Grant and Danny, looking for your best movie theater experience.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, buddy.
So, a little older than you guys. So, 1977, 7 years old, and got to go see the original Star Wars in a theater. Not the greatest of picture quality, not the greatest of sound, but we had a thunderstorm come up right during the Darth Vader Obi-Wan, fight. So that clap of the thunder and everything while the evil guy is taking on the good guy. And of course, we know how that ended. So.
You can't script that one.
That's pretty amazing.
Let's go to Seth in Clarksburg on Grant and Danny. Best theater experience?
1994, with my oldest brother, just graduated high school, Ace Ventura. Opening scene as the UPS man set the tone.
Dude.
HDS, got a package, people. Sounds broken, most likely, sir. Better with something nice, too. Though.
Some of mine are going with my brothers.
Oh, my God.
You know, like, because you just don't have that anymore. Everyone's grown up.
He had all the heat coming off of In Living Color. We're like, what's he going to do in his solo venture? How about make the funniest movie ever?
Chris and Culpepper, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, brothers? Great topic, like usual.
Body.
The movie that sticks out to me, 12 years old, enamored with weather. That's when everything technology was changing with the movie theaters. At least I noticed it. I have to go with Twister. I watched it at the old Spotsylvania Mall theater. Not the greatest experience there, but being 12 years old, be able to watch it with my friends and see that movie and look at the inside of the tornado and the meteorologist getting grabbed and whipped out and thrown out. It was amazing experience. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Thanks. Being 12 and a couple of Helen Hunt scenes in there, you probably didn't mind too much either.
Why? What happens?
Twister. Great film. Dave in Leesburg, we'll give you the last word on this. Movie you loved in theaters.
All right. Well, guys, great topic again and some great choices there. But the one I'll have to go with is the one that made me love movies. My dad took me when I was 11 years old, 1981. And I know, Grant, you're going to disagree. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark.
You saw that in theater?
I did.
Because that's based. Fantastic. So think about this run for Han, for I was calling him Han Solo, for Harrison
for Han
Ford.
Solo, yeah.
Han Solo, Han Solo again, and then he plays like swashbuckling archaeologist with a whip and a pistol, solving the whole world's problems. And he's basically going back and forth between Han Solo and Indiana Jones.
But I won't yuck his yum. He does shtick because he knows I didn't love those movies. But my dad and my brothers talk about those movies based on those experiences. They're older than me, obviously. My brothers and my dad, you know, they remember those nights and the theme and the, you know, coming over the speakers. I get that. I think that's a good answer. All right, the Beltway Blitz is next. Again, 50 years since Jaws dropped in theaters. Fun to reminisce with you guys on G&D.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.